This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
All right, thanks for those voice notes. You're sending them to 083-303-7093. And of course, your calls 0861-987. 000, it's 9 minutes after 10 o'clock here on Power Perspective. I'm Sebenzile Nkambule. Thank you very much for staying with us. All right, so we're going to talk a bit here, and I touched on it when we started off the show about the appointment of the next Chief Justice of the Constitutional Court, essentially the boss, right, of the judiciary. Who doesn't only have a responsibility as one of the 11 justices that are on the bench in the Constitutional Court, but in fact has the responsibility, of course, of looking after the judiciary, looking after lower courts, and so on. So it is indeed an important appointment that the president will be making soon, as the term of the incumbent Chief Justice Justin Mogoeng comes to an end next month on the 11th of October. And as we mentioned as well, that there are a number of vacancies as well on the bench, or at least coming up, Justice Kampepe as well as Justice Jafta as well, who are also coming up for retirement very soon. So lots of changes to be expected, but overall for the judiciary broadly, it is an opportunity, I think, when you have new leadership to where the gaps plug them, where there are issues of trust and doubt, fix them, figure out a way to reassure people that you have an independent judiciary. You have an independent judiciary led by somebody who is committed to the law, that is committed to the Constitution, and is not there to serve any other interests but that of the people of South Africa. All of these things are indeed important. We're joined now on the line by Mbekezeli Benjamin, who is a researcher at Judges Matter on this particular point. And of course, the call made by the presidency earlier today that you and I should in fact participate, calling for nominations, calling for people who have the adequate qualifications, who you feel have the required skills, the abilities to be the next leader of the judiciary to take on the position of Chief Justice of South Africa. Mbekezeli, thank you for your time with us this evening.
Good evening, Febe, and good evening to the people of power. Thank you for having us.
A very important appointment, isn't it, that the president has to make, and has to make soon, as the term of Chief Justice Mogoeng is coming to an end very soon. How important is this particular appointment compared to perhaps others, right, in our democracy? Chief Justice Mogoeng being the fourth Chief Justice as well. It's a job where, you know, folks are there for a very long time. Of course, not the case with Justice Ngobo, for example. But essentially, those who are appointed there are there for a long time, because also it's a very big job and an important role as well. Compared to other moments, if you will, in our democracy, how does this one at this time compare?
So this is a very important appointment, and it comes at a crucial time in our democracy, because where we are at the moment in terms of how the democracy is that we are about 27 years into democracy. It's becoming a lot more louder, a lot more tougher. Things are not so smooth anymore. So we need a strong leader at the top of the judiciary who will be able to navigate the judiciary through some of those challenges. We also, the pandemic has also, I think, added another dimension to this job, which some of us are not even thinking about 2 years ago, is that the judiciary right now is supposed to be moving to a more technological future where courts are run online, the systems of justice operate efficiently through the use of technology. So we need someone at the top who will set the tone for the rest of the judiciary. And so it was always an important appointment because it's the third arm of the state. We have the speaker, who's the head of the legislature, the president, who's the head of the executive, and the chief justice, the head of the judiciary. So the position is always important. But at this moment in time, it is even more important than it was in the past.
So for the president to be consultative, if you want to call it that, we're already hearing opposition parties, one or two already commenting to say that this is really to say we want people to participate. There isn't really much to it. It's just so that it seems as though there is indeed this desire for greater participation, but ultimately it's not up to us. What do you make of that, right? About this opening up of this process. Of course, it doesn't change how the appointment is then made, right? And that you have the role of the Judicial Services Commission. The president as well will consult whomever he chooses, consulting the commissioners, opposition parties, and so on, to make the particular appointment. Is it neither here nor there that there's now this call from the highest office in the land to say, go on, nominate people who you feel could, in fact, meet the qualifications, if you will, the criteria, rather, that you've just outlined for what we require in the person that that could potentially be the Chief Justice?
I think it's a little bit of a cynical view to say that, it doesn't matter that we are involved or not involved as the public. I think it's a cynical view, and it's unfortunate, because in the past it was in such a consultative process. The president simply could choose a name and say, this is the person that I nominate as Chief Justice, and then they'll be interviewed by the JSC, and then it would go on to Parliament. So. And that is, in terms of the law, the president is allowed to do that. And President Zuma did that. President Mbeki did that. But we should welcome a president who's willing to open up the process a little bit more. There is no legal requirement of him to do so. And so he decided that because he wanted more voices in this process, then he opened it up to the public. And to be quite honest with you, before I went to varsity and I went to law school, I didn't even know who the Chief Justice was. And it wasn't something that was present in my life that I followed quite closely. And now the children who are going to high school today, they have an opportunity to nominate someone. It could be a history or a social sciences project to write a nomination letter for the next Chief Justice. That's an important way that people are included in the processes of democracy, right? We always say democracy is for the people, by the people. This is one way in which this is happening. But the other good thing about this process that we've seen is that President Ramaphosa has included a panel of experts who come from a diversity of views. It's not just lawyers or judges. It also includes people from civil society, a person like Steve Letsike. They will add a different dimension to this decision. They will come not from a legal perspective, but they'll carry with them the experiences of people who are affected by the law, but they be lawyers themselves. So that adds, that makes the decision a much more richer decision. The quality of the decision will be a little bit better than it was in the past. So in as much as, yes, ultimately the president will take the decision on who becomes the Chief Justice, But the mere fact that more voices were included in the decision making, I think, improves the whole process.
We don't get to have a say, Mbekezele, on who is on the panel. So, in as much as you pull out the name of Steve Letsike as somebody representing civil society, you know, there may be somebody else who then says, okay, so you have a Professor Thuli Madonsela on there as well, and maybe take exception to that name or any other name. I'm just pulling those two names, for example, for the sake of the discussion, right? And it's a choice that that the president has then made. I wonder if it would have been an even more interesting exercise to then also say, let us also nominate people who can sit on that particular panel. And you know, you say it's a cynical view that also does speak to the lack of trust that South Africans that people have, right, with government, with political leaders broadly, and even the distrust really that many even, you know, political parties, for example, have expressed towards the judiciary. It's, you know, for the next person who'll come in, these are all the dynamics that they have to contend with and figure out what to prioritize so as to get us back to a place where the trust is far higher than what is the case right now.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. We unfortunately are at a point in time where there is a very low trust in institutions, in leaders of institutions, and that is actually not sustainable for our country and for democracy in South Africa. So we need to figure out ways of building that trust. There are different ways, right? People have different views of how we go about building the trust. But I'm convinced that this is one way in which you can build the trust, by having people have some sort of buy-in. Like I said earlier, there is no legal requirement for this additional layer, this nomination process to exist. There is no legal requirement. It's something that not even President Mandela did. He followed a similar process where he had a committee, but he appointed the committee, and the committee didn't call for nominations. They themselves decided on the two candidates who were going to be put forward as candidates for Chief Justice. So it's a unique process, and the intention that I, as I understand it, is to build that level of trust. The possibility, right? The option was always open to President Ramaphosa not to even go about this extra layer, because there are already two layers in this appointment process. He added an extra layer, third layer. He could not have done that, and I think that would not have built the trust that we complain about, because people would have turned around and said, but where does this name that he picked out of the sky come from? They would have said, why did he pick this judge over that judge over that judge? Why did he pick Shebe over Mbekezele, for example? Mm-hmm. So there was always going to be those kinds of criticisms. So one way of building the trust is to open up the process to a wider range of voices. And I think if we focus on the qualities, I think that's the most important thing. In any process, we should sort of, there should be a criteria that guides the process. We want a really good person or a really good judge to be Chief Justice. So what kind of qualities will help us decide on who that person becomes? And then that will also help in building the trust that we're speaking about.
My guest this evening is Mbekezele Benjamin, who's a researcher at Judges Matter. And we are talking about the process of opening it up or involving the public in the process of selecting the next Chief Justice of the Republic. The tenure of Chief Justice Mogoeng comes to an end in a couple of weeks' time, on the 11th of October, and the president ultimately will decide and appoint somebody, and they've invited the public to participate. You might have some thoughts on this. Give us a ring on 0861 987 000. Tweet as well at Sebeng Kambule and at PowerFM987. Do use that hashtag Power Perspective when you tweet us.
Power Perspective with Sebenzile Kambule, Monday to Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on Power 98.7.
26 after 10 o'clock here on Perspective. Thank you very much for staying with us. Of course, still in conversation with Mbekezile Benjamin, who's a researcher at Judges Matter. We're talking about the appointment of a new Chief Justice of the Republic of South Africa. Mbekezile, let's talk about the state of the Judicial Services Commission. They also having their own challenges as well with recent unruly behavior, if you will, the level of respect of that particular body has certainly been higher. Given where it is now, do you think that that will have a bearing on the process of the appointment of a new CJ?
It definitely will, because the Judicial Service Commission does play a big role in the appointment of the Chief Justice. But again, this is another thing that we need to keep in mind when we are thinking of the people to nominate a Chief Justice, is that the role of the Chief Justice in the past used to be someone who sits in the Constitutional Court and decides cases alone. But the way it has evolved is that the role now requires someone who can think about systems and processes and how to build systems so that they serve their function and they deliver on what is required on their constitutional mandate. So the Judicial Service Commission, you're quite right to say, it hasn't performed as well as we had expected it to. It hasn't been effective in getting good lawyers to become good judges on the bench. Mm. So that also falls on the Chief Justice, because the Chief Justice is the chairperson of the Judicial Service Commission. So for this appointment, well, we don't know who the candidates are, and two of the front runners in this process are people who would ordinarily have chaired the Judicial Service Commission, but now if they'll be interviewed, someone else has to step into the chair. Mm-hmm. And what we expect as Judges Matter, we hope that the Judicial Service Commission will come up with the written criteria as well that they will use to guide their questions, because some of the worst problems at the JSC is that there is no guiding document of what can be asked and what cannot be asked, and how do you ask a question. And this is why the JSC was even taken to court, that some of the questions do not really relate to finding out whether this person is a good quality person to become a judge. They were really dealing with issues that fall very far from that. And so a criteria will help sort of focus the process and direct it in a certain way. And we hope that the Judicial Service Commission will come up with that criteria even before they need to interview the Chief Justice candidates.
Yeah, I was about to ask, whose job is it to come up with that criteria? Because if the problem is within the JSC itself, how do you then expect that the same entity, the same body, will then be able to come up with ways to improve how they work?
Well, the constitution and the law gives the JSC the power to decide its own processes and how it goes about its job. But remember, the JSC is quite a big body. It's made up of lawyers, of judges, mm. of members of parliament, and they all need to basically become the grown-ups in the room and work together to come up with, to formulate this criteria. I think seeing what happened in April and the court case that went to court where their decision was challenged, we hope that they will draw lessons from that experience. So that experience in April 2021 must be the lowest point that they can go. So from now onwards, we hope that they will take this responsibility seriously and draw up a criteria.
Let me take a call from Ulwazi in Pretoria, calling us on 0861-987-000. Hello, Ulwazi.
Oh, hello. How are you? Good. I mean, how are you, lady?
Good, thank you, Ulwazi.
Yeah, I'd like to comment about this decision that Mr. Ramaphosa has taken. I think there are two reasons, but I think one of the main reasons, in my opinion, why Mr. Ramaphosa has chosen to do this. Okay, although I understand that Mr. Mogoeng's term is going to end in October, but I think part of the reason they are involving us as the masses is because on the 1st of October, we are going to vote. And I think this is a way of sort of trying to please us as the masses to sort of have faith in Mr. Ramaphosa and therefore ultimately in the ANC for us to, you know, go to the polls and think about them and being some kind of a inclusive party that supports people and includes people in decision making and so forth. But whether this is a good move for the judicial system and for the constitution, I'm not really sure. But I think it's definitely a good political strategy for them to gain votes, particularly from us as black people, unfortunately. So I think this is a political move that they're just trying to do some marketing, if I may put it that way, before the elections.
Lozi, thank you for your call. Lozi on the line there from Pretoria. Mbegazi, let me also read this tweet as well, and you can respond to both. Unique says, our democracy is being misused by our leaders because if it's something that is going to benefit them, they want to include us. But if it's something that is going to benefit us, they don't even include us. They just make their own decisions. Let them select the CJ, says Unique. Mbegazi?
those are really interesting views that this process is being used by the politicians. I respect the view, but I my heart cannot agree with it, because I'd like to think that sometimes we believe that the people that we elect are the responsible for taking decisions because they are supposed to represent us. But I always welcome any opportunity for me to represent myself. So this is one opportunity where I think the public will play some sort of a role. Yes, the role is limited. It's not the deciding role, but it is an important role that we will play in terms of nominating candidates to be Chief Justice. So I take a lot of comfort from that. And yes, maybe the president is using it for his own PR and maybe marketing. And I'm not sure how it relates to the local government elections, but even be that as it may, for me, I think we as the public benefit more than he does from our participation in this.
And for the public to also then participate, what sort of competencies do we need in order to be able to participate in this? Because that's also a requirement, right? Or perhaps if not enough of us, you know, understand the law, understand the judiciary broadly, the significance of this particular role, how the JSC works, how the judiciary is meant to then serve us. If we don't have the language around that, or even just the patience, right, to understand these issues beyond, oh, Judge Spanbani was biased towards this person, or the courts are after this particular politician. If it doesn't go beyond that, how then do we meaningfully participate in this process?
So that's an important question, Sebe. And it's a question that we at Judges Matter have been finding ways of answering. For the last 5 to 6 years, we've been trying to open up this process of how judges are appointed. We try as much as possible to put the information out there so that people can see the people who want to be judges in the courts, because the people who preside over our courts affect our lives, whether we like it or not. If one day your house is being possessed by a bank, a judge will decide whether or not the bank can take your house. If you need a child to be maintained, you need maintenance, that a judge or a magistrate will be the one to decide whether or not you should get maintenance and how much. So all of those day-to-day decisions that affect our lives are decided by these people. So what we at Judges Matter have done, and we've done it every single year, is to put up the videos of the interviews of some of the judges. Mm. A lot of the judges who are on the Constitutional Court or who would be candidates for Chief Justice, their videos are up on YouTube. So you can watch and see how the person performs during the interview. You can see you don't need to be a lawyer, in fact, because some of the questions are really basic questions about how a person thinks about the role of the law in ordinary people's lives. And we're hoping that through watching those videos, through reading the profiles, because we try to have detailed profiles on our website, through reading those profiles, you can get a sense of the kind of person who would be good as Chief Justice. And which is, it goes back to the point I was making earlier, that the qualities of a good Chief Justice are where we need to start before we come up with the names. So, for example, we need a Chief Justice who is very good at the law. We need a Chief Justice who can communicate not only to lawyers and judges, but communicate to ordinary members of the public mm-hmm. about the role of the judiciary and how it impacts our lives. Mm. We need someone who is a proven leader, so someone who has experience of running a court. That is something that would be important in the Chief Justice who has to run the highest court in the land. So those are the kinds of things that we've tried to make available, and we'll be doing so for the next coming weeks into this process to make the information accessible to everyone.
Mm-hmm. There's one former DCJ who we saw in the commission looking into whether or not we should postpone the elections. He's somebody we saw during the Life as a Dimeni inquiry, an author, a delightful speaker, one Justice Moseneke, who missed out a couple of times. Would be somebody that many, many people would say fit the list of qualities or tick the right boxes, looking at the list of qualities that you've just listed, and yet he still missed out. And when you think about someone like that and the ultimate decision sitting with the head of state, it's great that we get to participate. But you almost wonder whether or not it'll go as far as we need it to go. How do we ensure that? Is there a way, Mbekezile, in your view, that we ensure that happens? You know, there's also the person of the Deputy Chief Justice, Raymond Zondo, as well. It's not a given that he just, gets promoted and becomes the Chief Justice. It doesn't quite work like that. There'll be many who then say he's had to manage a very difficult, unprecedented process, and that he's done so with grace, but with the firmness that process required. Then, of course, there'll be others that say, it was used, there was an agenda, and so on. So you have all of these people, and you almost don't want the process also to become about personalities, but also so much of the job is about the person of the Chief Justice.
Yeah, I think how we may ensure that a good candidate is appointed out of this process is firstly to pay attention. I think as people, we tend to be distracted on. Hi, can you still hear me?
I can, yes, Mbekezile.
Oh, I'm sorry. But I was saying sometimes we get distracted. And so what's important now is for us to pay attention, to focus on the process. What will happen is that there will be these nominations that will be made, and then there will be interviews at the Judicial Service Commission. Those interviews we all need to watch. The reason why we need to watch is so that we can see how each candidate performs. Mm. Because if it's quite clear that one candidate is performing exceptionally better than the other candidate, then we will have serious questions to ask the president if that candidate is not appointed. He will have to account on why he chose this candidate over the other candidate, even though we all were watching those interviews and we saw that this one performed better than all of them. Mm-hmm. So I think paying attention is the most important thing that we can do to guard against a bad appointment being made.
Take more calls on 0861-987-000. Opa is in Pretoria. Hi there, Opa.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I'm neither a lawyer or...
Yes. Opa, not sure what happened there. Let's hear it from Tepo in Pretoria North, and we'll try Opa again in just a moment. Tepo?
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Fantastic. The backstop by who? By the president.
Yes.
We can sing loud and do whatever we want. If he decides to choose one person, he will. But on a lighter note, I choose two magistrates in Johannesburg Court, number 20 and 23. If they are not eligible, then I will settle for Chief Justice. I will settle for Justice Jafta, because he's like someone who doesn't buy things.
He's retiring.
Yeah. Justice Jafta.
Yes, I'm saying Justice Jafta is also retiring, Tepo.
Oh, my God. Even Zondo cannot fit, because the age is not on his side. You see? Then the buck stops with the president, and there's other requirements that the president must pick. It's not only about qualifying and answering questions. Mm. It's like the race, DEE, whatever, all those things. You understand? So at the end of the day, the president is just wasting our time. He's just buying face on us. He's trying to be a smart person to us. But at the end of the day, he's the one who must decide.
It's his job.
Thank you.
Yeah, Tepo in Paterno. Thank you. Opa, I think we have you on a better line.
Oh, thanks.
Yes, we lost you when you were saying you are neither a lawyer or a...
Yeah, that is not the question or the nub. I think the move by the president is quite significant to a point that he doesn't pulverize the law, but he allows it to have a broader view. Because if you look at the whole appointment of the judiciary, it's a structural approach, and it has inherited a code of saying that power is defined between the legal system. And the law is quite above that, because the law is supposed to serve the entire morality of the nation. Now, if we have reduced the law to serve a structural approach in terms of saying that if you are a constitutional head of the state, then it's quite a positional approach, but it does not have the focus in terms of the morals and the ethics and in terms of that. So if the president opens up that, he's saying we don't need only a professional because he's an advocate or he's got two master's degrees in terms of the law or he has served in the Judicial Services Commission or anything. That is a structural approach. And this is what we have in the ANC. If you're not the branch chairperson or provincial chairperson, you are not tried and tested. But the president is saying, no, if we've got a moral figure or an ethical person, that comes from an institution other than the law, are we not going to respect him?
Are we though, Oba?
I'm saying, if as a nation we have a moral figure and an ethical figure that is beyond reproach in terms of the law, can't we appoint that person?
How do you make sure that they get the law and understand the law? Because that's where the years of experience comes from.
Experts, as a president is not an expert of everything. But if the president surrounds himself of the constitutional court, surrounds himself with teams that are dealing with specific subjects, he will take a moral and ethical decision on behalf of the country. The law is a subservient of morality and ethics. It's not beyond morals and ethics. Therefore, what I'm trying to say is, it is the position that we're talking about. It is not the morals and the ethics we're talking about. If we have a person that's going to be appointed that is above reproach of anything, above morals and ethics, superseding an ideology that is going to maintain the law beneath them, are we not doing the right thing? Because the law, it is beneath morals and ethics. If the president is taking that decision, he's taking the right decision, because of morality and ethics are the question of human existence. And if we put the right person, then the law and everything else can deal beneath that.
Mm. All right. Mbekezeli, jump in there. Your thoughts there?
I feel like he's taking us into a jurisprudence class in law school. look, the decision of the president, he's right to say it ultimately rests on his shoulders. The president will have to make the decision. But I think through this process, through having the public involved in the process, I think it moves the decision outside of only the law. So he'll not only be listening to the views of lawyers or judges or people involved in the law, but he'll have a wider view from different people, from different perspectives in society. And hopefully he makes the wise decision. I don't think we can take it further than that, because ultimately a decision has to be made and only one person can make the decision, and it is the president.
One of the critiques, right, of somebody like a Mogoeng, even ahead of his appointment, was to broadly say his beliefs, right, the concerns about the influence of that, right, on how he looks at issues. Recently, as recent as, when was it? Was it April? I believe it was ahead of his leave. Comments made about Israel, essentially criticizing South Africa's foreign policy on Israel, which, I mean, of course, it's a massive, massive issue, not only for the ruling party, but for anybody who really has, you know, paid attention, or even if it's not deeply, right, but you have a sense about apartheid, about issues of human rights and so on. And so your assessment of the Palestine and Israel situation would be one. And so when you hear Chief Justice holding those views, it can easily be very, very polarizing. It is very problematic. Here you have somebody in a key leadership position, right? And expressing himself in such a way. Many, many folks, of course, saying that in the role could, or that he didn't show sufficient appreciation of what the role in fact requires, and the impact that his beliefs, in fact, could have, and maybe did have, but could potentially have, in almost derailing what that particular office is then meant to do.
Yeah, look, judges are human beings. They form part of our society. They listen to the news that we all listen to. They go to church with us. They are our uncles, our aunts. They attend, they grew up in the same cultural environments that we all do. So it's unreasonable to expect that they will only be empty vessels without any views of the world. They do have views of the world. But because of the unique position that they occupy in society, in that they decide on issues in a way that affects our lives, and we expect them to be always be impartial and only guided by the law, there is some restraint into what they can and cannot say, especially in public. So that is an expectation. I mean, that is an expectation that we place on them, but it's also a limitation that they take up when they take the oath of office. They promise that they will be faithful to the law and the constitution, and that in terms of judicial ethics, they'll be restrained on what they can and cannot say, or the people or the things that they can be associated with. For example, judges are not allowed to be members of political parties, even though the constitution allows everyone to be a member of a political party. Judges are completely not allowed to be that. It's a limitation on the right that they take up when they become a judge. But not to the, some of these views that a judge has are important to ask. That's why in public interviews, some politicians will ask those questions of a judge to say, what is your view on this human rights issue? What is your view on this social issue that affects a broad number of people in South Africa, and which might be viewed in terms of the law, but it might be viewed in terms of society? It's important to ask those questions because it somehow some of those views influence how the person interprets the law, influence how they do this work of judging. So some of those views is completely acceptable to ask, and it's completely fair for a judge to have, but there are certain views and there are certain things that a judge cannot be associated with, and that is just the burden of the job. And so a Chief Justice needs to be wise and know which issues can he be associated with in public and which ones can they not be associated with in public. It's a question of wisdom and ethics.
Let's hear from Richard in Protea Glen. Hi, Richard.
Hello, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
You know what? I've got a letter from municipality from, I don't know what they have. Is it possible to someone from JMPD, whatever department, summons me? I've been 2 years staying in Glenridge, no? And I've been staying there for like 10 years. Mara, now they're saying municipalities taking over. I've been handed to the security debt collectors.
All right, Richard, I'm not sure what you're talking about. Let's figure that out, and then maybe after our conversation, we can come back to him. Finally, Mbegazile, as we wrap up, your assessment of the outgoing Chief Justice's time. Did he leave, or will he leave the seat of the Chief Justice of South Africa in a better place than what he found it? Your overall assessment of his contribution in the role?
Well, I think Chief Justice Mokgoeng made a very big contribution to our democracy in his time as Chief Justice. There were some important initiatives that he led within the judiciary. So, for example, before 2014, we never had a written code of conduct for judges. It was something that came with Justice Mokgoeng. There were times in our recent history where the judiciary came under very strong attack from different quarters of society, and he stood up and led the judiciary and spoke on behalf of the judiciary. That was an important thing because some of us were worried about what it would mean for the independence of the judiciary for politicians to be attacking the judiciary so much. And he stood and he led in that moment. But there were times where I wish that he could have taken different decisions, better decisions, where he wish he didn't say some of the things he said. But overall, I think he leaves a solid legacy, and his time as Chief Justice is one in which there was a tremendous move forward, and we hope that the next Chief Justice will be able to build on that legacy and strengthen the judiciary.
Well, we watch it very closely and hope that as many South Africans as possible will participate, will nominate people, and that we'll listen to your encouragement of us to watch videos of interviews so that we have a sense of who the people are, and it isn't just us waiting for that appointment to be made, but actually participate in the process, because we very much are at the heart of it as well. Thank you, Mbekezele, for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much, Sebe, and thanks to the listeners.
Thank you, Mbekezele Benjamin, researcher at Judges Matter.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.